All right, folks, we are back with the Flagstaff.com Tee Talk podcast. The champ is here, and I'm not talking Bryson. I'm talking me. Another major down. Another bet lost by my co-host, Scott McLeod. Scott, how does it feel to know you will have to be the caddy for the best golfer around, Stefan Tiedorf?
The best better on golf around, maybe? That's about it. You know what? All props to you. And the big thing, and I played that clip. I put that out on Twitter as well. You didn't pick him just because of the distance. You picked him properly because of his short game, how he was putting, and obviously that was a big factor in how he won this U.S. Open that, as you said, a lot of people forgot. So big props to you for that, and I'm happy to carry your golf bag.
Yeah, and let's talk about it. You know, he won the U.S. Open. I think the best thing I saw of the week was if Rory McIlroy did this and won the U.S. Open, nobody would be complaining about Bob and Gouge. Bob and Gouge, can't even say it. I'm just so annoyed about it. You know, it's not like he, you know, didn't do other things well. He wasn't even the longest driver on the week.
Like, nope, not at all.
You know, and to be honest with you, I think going into Sunday with Matt Wolf having the lead, I gave him zero chance of winning that. Young kid, first time there, holding the lead in a major, going into Sunday with, you know, being a U.S. kid, U.S. Open, I gave him zero shot of winning that. Bryson just played well all week. We're going to get to a lot of different things from the arm lock to everything else in between and wing foot. But, you know, overall, what was your thoughts of the entire tournament?
Yeah, I think that was the biggest thing for me. It was just taking away and looking at, here was two golfers playing golf their way and finding the best way to get around to shoot the lowest score. And I think a lot of the bitching and complaining and stuff that we saw about people is that, you know, people paint golf into a box. They think you've got to play it one way. And so I think that just showed a lot of people that, you know what, golf at the highest level is about doing your own thing. Having, and I said it in my in a tweet, I said, you know, mastery is not caring about what other people think. It's about going out there and doing what you need to do and not being concerned about being judged. So for me, I mean, you know, we can talk about some things about the golf course, you know, the level of play. I agree as far as Wolf was concerned. He sort of looked like Rory, you know, getting into the cottages at the Masters that first time. It looked like Mike Weir shooting 80, you know, and he was in the mix at a major early on. I think, you know, that was the case for Wolf. I think, you know, just the amount of experience and determination that Bryson has obviously played into it for him. And frankly, you know, I called the score at being plus two. So for him to do what he did was pretty incredible. And obviously Matt Wolf did it one day. He shot that 65 and got himself in the mix for the lead. But you know, couldn't do it in the end, and Bryson got it done. And you got to give him credit. Doesn't matter what you think about him. You can still hate him. You can still think he plays too slow. You can say, oh, that's not the way to play or whatever the case may be, but he got the trophy in the end and you've got to respect that.
And so this is where I don't know where I want to go right now. Do I want to go with the golf course? And I'm going to give credit. Let's go there. That's one. What's on my mind right
sure.
now
is that. Let's take it off the list. We'll go down the list.
Let's start with the golf course. We'll get to the scoring later. Kind of might fit in. Well, like start with the golf course. So obviously the rough was thick. The rough was thick everywhere. So to say, is it an advantage to hit it long when the rough's thick because you're going to have less club in? Absolutely. So my thought here though is, nobody was hitting fairways at all in the first place. And that's the part of the U.S. Open that always was the thing. Like, hit fairways and you got a chance, right? Like, the accurate people are going to win. And maybe they're proving that wrong, that isn't the case anymore. But maybe that's what you do. Maybe give a little bit more room shorter to give these guys a chance. But at the same time, if Bryson's going to hit a wedge that well out of rough, which takes a lot of skill, especially with the amount of science, and I'm not chirping him, the amount of science he puts in to make a decision to be like, okay, knowing this, I wouldn't doubt it if early in the week he went in the rough with his wedges and threw down his TrackMan, was trying to get all the info out of there. They are right in that sense. I do think that if everyone's going to miss the fairway, why not miss the fairway as long as possible? So That being said, I did see some people dispute that fact with the U.S. Open that, you know, the most accurate people win. And if you went back the last 5 years, only Brooks Koepka was in the top 10 in accuracy going and won the U.S. Open. So what is the U.S. Open anymore? Because if that's not the identity, what is it?
Well, I think the problem is that everybody has a romantic notion of what the identity is. They think of what it was in their mind. They think about what the announcers are saying, whether they're experts or not, because I can tell you right now, you know what? There are people that they have on there that are analysts, that are broadcasters. They're not necessarily the most qualified people to discuss what they're talking about.
Oh,
they
what about the top spin argument? Did you hear that? Yeah, I got a little side, bit of a battle.
Side spin? Yeah, side spin too.
Side spin.
Yeah, I heard them all. Yeah. But the problem is that people hear that over and over in the broadcast. And I don't mean just, you know, avid golfers. I mean, the average golfers as well. The more that they hear that, that becomes the, it shapes the notion of what the U.S. Open is. But really, as you said, you can go back and you can look and see back in time. I mean, you know, guys like Jack Nicklaus, you know, they were long. They had an advantage, right? But they had, that was an advantage back then. It's not just, this is not new.
No,
as far as what they're doing. And I guarantee you, if you go back, you're not going to find, you know, Jack Nicklaus being that much more accurate. And on the other side of it too, you know, you could miss and hit the ball in the rough, but you still got to have a line to the flag. It's not like you're like pitching out all the time or whatever. So it's not like they're off line by that much. We're not talking guys here hitting it ball, you know, 60 yeah. yards off the fairway. And I will tell you, the average dispersion on a PGA Tour player, and you can look into the statistics of it, is more in the range of a shotgun pattern of 60 yards wide. Well, when you've got fairways that are only 25 yards wide, well, you're going to miss fairways. Mm-hmm. That is just the way it is. And if you go back and correlate that back to, you know, what happened in years past, yeah, you know what? They were hitting drivers shorter, for sure. So as a result of it, they may not have been that far off line. Were they more accurate? Not necessarily the case. You know, they might hit more fairways, but it doesn't mean because of skill level that they're necessarily doing it. So, you know, I think there's this romantic notion. And I think if people go back, and I think you're seeing that now, people that are heavily involved in the statistics of the game are now going back and analyzing stuff. Now they don't have all the data that they can work with, but they can see that, you know, that romantic notion is not exactly what actually happened.
Yeah. And I think people are saying, they're like, well, you know, it's not as entertaining to watch people do this because they don't have to hit all the shots. Back when it was entertaining, I'm going to put that into quotes,
sure,
yeah. You didn't even get to see where the shot went. All you got to see is where they were and where the ball ended up anyway. So I just don't even believe that argument anymore. I think that argument's a joke. I think at the end of the day, what's entertaining is people, is Sunday, people being in the mix, multiple lead changes. It's just like a basketball game, anything else. Basketball is, you know, one of the best sports out there right now in terms of the people watching it, entertainment value. Same with the NFL, is because there's the amount of lead changes that happen within a game are what brings that entertainment value. So that's what they need to be looking at rather than this. And I don't think I agree with all the takes. I don't want the ball going back. I don't think club changes should happen.
No.
Why? It's the only sport that we're trying to make people worse at it for some reason. Doesn't matter the level, if it's professional or amateur. It just makes no sense. I think it's just going to go on and on and nothing's going to happen. I don't think any equipment manufacturer is going to agree with it either. This idea of like they have to make a ball for the tour. Good luck. Like, the equipment manufacturers are not going to be on board for that. That's for sure. On top of it, I'm just sick of the argument. Bryson deserved to win. He was the best player from the start to finish. He finished minus six at Wingfoot.
Yeah.
He wasn't even the longest driver. I don't even think he's one of the best iron players out there. His short game's pretty awful too. So like generally speaking, he just put one of the best. He was finding the right spots and he had the strength to go to the rough. If that's how the game looks like in the future, hey, go get in the gym. Everyone else can do what he's doing. It just takes a lot of work.
Yeah, game changes. Strategies adapt. We have more knowledge. We push forward. Things change. If you want to sit there and cry about it and put the genie back in the bottle, you're going to be crying for a long time.
Yeah,
because it's going to be a continual thing. So, you know, sit back, be entertained, because, you know, this golf course, it wasn't about the length that made it really entertaining. It was those green forms, those shapes. And I played golf yesterday with a guy who's played a fair bit at Wingfoot, has a good friend who's a member there. And we had some discussions about it. And we happen to be playing at a golf course, Cherry Hill in the southern part of Ontario here, that has, you know, it's a Walter Travis design with some really wild greens that are firm and fast. And I tell you what, the challenge was not about just driving off the tee as far as possible so you could hit, you know, a flip wedge into the shot. Because I guarantee you, it didn't matter whether you were hitting a wedge or a five iron in. You had to be so precise as far as where you're landing it and where the ball was going to finish so that you could have a chance to not three putt. And that amount of strategy is what these great golf courses are about. And the driver off the tee just does not eliminate that. It really doesn't.
And you know, black armbands today for the Wingfoot members. Every one of them, oh, it's over par. It's going to be over par. I saw a guy on this video. Some guy said that start of the week he had like $20,000 on the score being over par. Well, sorry, yeah. Buddy. You know, and that's the thing. It goes back. I've said it all the time. The golf course doesn't have feelings. Get over it. I don't care. Yeah. I hope the USGA doesn't get their mind made up next year that, okay, next year we're going to guarantee it's over par. Like, let's just stop with all that. Let's go into some other takeaways from the week. Obviously, you know, we didn't care that it ended minus six and who won. You know, is Bryson our favorite player? Probably not, but doesn't matter. I thought it was entertaining. I love watching the U.S. Open. It's, you know, probably my third favorite of the championships. But, you know, who is your big shock of the week performance-wise? And I can assume Bryson isn't it.
No, definitely not. I mean, we figured he was going to be in the mix. I didn't have him obviously predicting that he was going to win like you did, but you knew he was going to be there. He's just playing too well, and he's just doing too many things too well and has confidence in it. So I think my biggest one for me was Abraham Answer. I mean, I had him as sort of a, you know, he wasn't in my four, but he was a guy we talked about with his short game and his ability, you know, to perform well there, knowing that, you know, as we saw, getting up and down and being able to handle those undulations and the false fronts and all those things were important because you weren't going to hit fairways, you weren't going to hit greens, so you needed a good short game. And obviously his talent with his wedges is immense, but yeah, he was near the bottom, made the cut, but oh, no, actually, he didn't make the cut.
No, he made the cut, T56. Yeah. The reason why it looked like he didn't make the cut is when...
because he was near the bottom.
Yeah, well, no, Danny Lee did that six putt on Saturday and then withdrew, which still gave him last place money, which is so super weird. He probably should have gotten none and faked an injury after acting like an absolute fool on the 18th hole. And then what ended up happening is if you open up the PGA Tour app, it ended up, for some reason, because Abraham Answer was supposed to play with him because he was in the last group, was supposed to play with him, and then it moved him down to missing the cut. He ended up playing with a marker, the head pro out,
yeah,
out at Wingfoot. So he ended up finishing T56.
Yeah, so I think for him to be plus 21 there, although, you know, plus 21 sounds like a horrific score, but it really wasn't when you look at it as far as the field was concerned. But he was probably my biggest surprise. I really expected him to do a lot more this week and you know, have been in contention. What about you?
I got three.
Okay.
My first one is Ryo Ishikawa.
Yes.
The fact that he's still playing golf, he's still alive. The fact that I believe he's still in his 20s. He's like, it just rattles me that he was there finishing T51. This guy doesn't even have a player profile anymore on the PGA Tour's website. So that was awesome. Louis Oosthuizen's a huge surprise for me, but I got to stop with him. I think that my go-to from here on out, every major, if I'm betting
just
on the major,
Louis,
I'm going to put him in the top 10. I'm just going to bet Louis who stays in top 10. He's going to be there, and you're just going to cash, and you're going to rake in money. Huge surprise for me. The one I got to eat crow on, though, is Taylor Pendrith. This is our guy that I said, you know, he's not going to be the low guy of the Canadians. You can go back and listen to it, and I apologize to Taylor straight up. This kid deserves to be where he is. This guy played his ass off this week.
Yeah. Second lowest round on Sunday, even on Sunday.
Yeah. Finishing T23, for the week. And I think he almost made just as much this week, if not close this week, than he has all year on the Korn Ferry Tour. One guy that did make way more this week than he did all year on the Korn Ferry Tour. And this guy is destroying the Corn Ferry Tour is Will Zalatoris.
Yeah, Zalatoris.
Made like almost 500 grand, finished T6. Yeah. I think he has multiple wins this season on the Corn Ferry Tour and doesn't have even close to that money. So, yeah, I mean, I named four guys. What about the other way? Was there a guy where you're just kind of shocked that, you know, they missed the cut in the fashion they did, or anything that kind of popped out to you?
Westwood, you know what? Here's another guy. I mean, you talk about Ishikawa being a guy, you know, kind of fall off the radar and you don't hear much about him. Westwood, you know, not much happening this year. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's there, you know, and, you know, he played well. He, was plus two on Sunday, ended up T13 overall, plus seven. That would have been a surprising one to me. There's certainly, you know, when I look through the list, he wasn't a name that I was picking. I could have picked him to maybe be T50, but I certainly would not have said he was going to be in the top 15 by the end of the week.
Yeah, 100%. I love when Lee's in the mix. He's that guy I'm cheering for. I want him to pick up. I want him to win an open championship, similar to, I'm drawing a Darren Clark. I can see it happening. I think the circumstances have to be perfect for it. I said at the start of the year prior to COVID, like, because he had won right on the European Tour. And
yeah,
I was
right.
That's my pick for the Open this year. Like, this guy's going to be hot. And then I also said him as one of my top guys I'm worried about with a break.
Yes, that's right. In the pubs, it's a little bit too hard, maybe. Yeah.
So that one shocked me. Just a couple notable missed cuts. Obviously, Colin Morikawa missing the cut.
Yes, just that was a shocker for sure.
Ben on almost making the cut was a shocker to me. After day one, he shot a 71. Considering his practice run the day before, he was 8 over on the back nine. And then Corey Connors, unfortunately, I thought this was a tournament made for him and just finished 4 over in the last four holes and just unfortunate. Yeah. One guy I was not shocked about, watching him warm up, testing drivers.
Oh yeah,
15 minutes before teeing off was Phil Mickelson. And then he goes up to the first tee and he's got this drill he's trying to practice with his hand. He's clearly trying to slap it with the back of his right hand through impact. This guy, I don't even think he was on Wingfoot's property by the end of it. He was hitting it everywhere.
Yeah. I think a lot of people, again, a lot of sentimentality. They were hoping for, you know, maybe a little correction in history from 2006.
Nope.
And, you know, so we'll see what happens with him going forward. Torrey Pines hosting the U.S. Open next year. So in San Diego, in his backyard. So we'll see if he's playing in there. And who knows, that might be a swan song for the U.S. Open.
Yeah.
There. But yeah, I mean, it quickly became a non-story. I mean, it was something that was probably talked about more than anything, actually, heading into the week. It really, besides,
it's,
you know,
every year with
Bryson,
the U.S. Open, though,
yeah,
with Phil, right?
Yeah, of course. Thing. But, you know, here was a special significance, you know, having what he did in 2006, where, you know, a lot of people were not talking about the fact that Colin Montgomery threw it away either. But again, we're talking 14 years ago. I mean, it's, you know, think about that. You know, if you sit there and take any other sport and you get romantic about, hey, what are the chances the guy could win this year? You know, he was in contention 14 years ago.
Yeah.
Golf might be the only sport that it could
not
possibly
tennis,
happen.
Yeah.
But you know what, it's really not a realistic thing. So I think some people just maybe, you know, again, it's hard. I mean, everybody, it's 24/7 news cycle, so everybody's trying to, you know, find content to talk about, and unfortunately it becomes ad nauseum, or, you know, especially when we deal with social media, some of the echo chamber effect there of just people just repeating, oh well, that guy says that, so it must be right, and not knowing, you know, they're not really well qualified to talk about that. But I think it was just a storyline that was maybe hopeful from the American side of it, but not realistic at all.
Here's why I don't think this is the last time we're going to see Phil at a U.S. Open, or next year, or the year after. I think he's going to probably win the senior U.S. Open. He's probably going to play it, and he's got to be the favorite going into something like that. And I think that's like the perfect, you know, turn around into his 50s. He wins that. When you win that, you do get, I don't know how many years you get into the standard U.S. Open from there, but you do get access into access. I don't even know if it's the right word, but you are able to get into the U.S. Open after that.
That's true.
So I think we'll see Phil again at the U.S. Open. Do I see Phil ever competing again at a U.S. Open at this age. No, I think this is the tournament that it just doesn't make for the older guys. And I think Tiger almost showed it out there this week as well. However, I'll give them both this. They didn't have the high round of the week. This goes to my guy, Sung Kang, with an 86 on Saturday. Friday, he went 74-86 to miss the cut and come in second last, beating an amateur by one shot.
Yeah, that's got to sting. I mean, you know, guys know it's going to be tough, but from an ego wise, that's definitely bruising. That's for sure. And I mean, you know, they end up shooting numbers here where it's hard to wrap your brain around it, really. I mean, to go out and, you know, shoot 75 and think some days that's a good round.
Yeah.
You know, that's hard to fathom, especially these players at this level. But you know what? Overall, it was entertaining. It was something I was definitely wanting to watch. Want to see more Matt Wolf for sure. I think this guy's got loads of talent. I think he's got lots of wins ahead of him still. Whether that happens in a U.S. Open or a major, you know, we'll find out as far as that's concerned. But I think he's fun to watch, and I think it was interesting. I think you've got two golfers with very unique swings, very unique approaches. It wasn't the perfect swing, you know, air quotes there, as far as people, you know, expect to see. And I think that's the reality of golf, you know. It really is.
100%. It definitely was weird watching the US Open with no fans. I think it's one of the most rowdy ones of them all, and I think that helped people like Bryson. But that being said, I just have it in the background as we're recording this. They have this Payne Stewart Cup.
Yep.
Payne's Valley Cup. It's to unveil this awesome new golf course that Tiger Woods has designed in the Ozarks somewhere around there. But there are so many people on this golf course. Like, I'm watching, they're playing the 19th hole right now, which is A, amazing, but B, I'm just telling that there is a 19th hole. B, the actual hole is like an island in the middle of
quarry.
This rock quarry, which is cool.
Looks all natural, doesn't it?
Yeah, very natural, absolutely. And there must be 100 people staying behind the tee. Worst thing ever that's going to come out of this, if one of these people test positive and then one of these players like Tiger or Rory test positive, like one of these big names out there, Gary Player's about to hit off. Gary went on a tee today about some crazy nonsense, which if anyone listens to this podcast, you all
know.
What's
going on about trees on golf courses, but yeah, among other things.
He did just hit a dart. He's like 86, just hit a dart on this par three. So, but I just see this right now and I'm pretty worried. This pandemic's still here. Like, I just don't get what they're thinking right now in America. I love that the PGA Tour, I actually earlier on said, I have a feeling one tournament's just going to be like, no, we're bringing in fans. I'm glad they haven't yet.
Yeah, we're going to see one on the European Tour. I saw a mention of that, but we were talking about a limit of 650 fans. I think that's what it was. So going to be a small amount spread around or whatever. I don't know what the purpose is, really. 650 or 6,000. I understand it's a very different situation, but I think someone's going to roll the dice at some point, and unfortunately, I think they're going to come up craps.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, I don't think they're going to have any fans this week at Punta Cana, whether they offered it or not. Have you seen this field that they have this week at Punta Cana? It is, and there's some friends in the field, good friends
there
in the
are.
Field.
There are.
It's not good. I think I saw a stat that this is the worst strength of field in 3,000 years. Yeah, it's really bad. I think it was something like, I don't have the numbers, maybe you do. I think the strength of field for the US Open last week was 800, like in the 800s.
Yeah.
This week it's like double digits. I think it's like 73 or something like that. Yet it's worth only 100 less FedEx Cup points than the US Open.
Yeah, it's now a standalone event. It's always been played as an opposite field event, and now it's a standalone event. I think this one was interesting. Four players who made the cut at last week's U.S. Open are in the field.
Yeah, that is insane. Do you have those four players' names by any chance?
Will Zalatoris, who gets an exemption in there. He was T6 that week. Adam Long, he's bringing in the fans.
Okay.
Thomas Dietry? I can't even tell you who this guy is.
He was in the U.S. Open too. Okay.
T49 made the cut. And Charles Howell III. So, I mean, if those are your headliners, obviously they've got Henrik Stenson, Graham McDowell's in the field, but yeah, she's pretty slim. I mean, 64 PGA Tour winners sounds like a lot, but normally when you look at a field, you know, generally you'll have 100 plus PGA Tour winners in a field. So yeah, it's pretty thin. A lot of guys just taking a pass, not wanting to play in this. Who's to blame? They're probably tuckered out after the U.S. Open. Here's a chance. Here's a window to get a little bit of rest, you know, even though they might be staying in the bubble, per se. I think that's unfortunate for the event, but it'll produce a winner.
Absolutely. And that's where my take was going to go is I'm going to put the guarantee on the line that this is a card saving winner this week.
Oh, for sure.
It is somebody that, that if they don't win this year or they get into the FedEx Cup playoffs this year, they are losing their card. One of these people that probably benefited from this wraparound double season with their card. This field is weak. A lot of these people, that's what they got to do. They got to find a way to pick up a win when it's like this. So I'm looking forward to checking in on a couple friends that are in the field this week and see how they do. And hopefully they're able to make a good paycheck. Do you even know what the prize is? Is it similar? Is it still alternate event money though?
Yeah, it's actually $4 million is the purse, $720 to the winner. So
that's pretty big for an alternate event.
But you know, it's obviously compared to a lot of the PGA Tour events now, it's $7 or $8 million. It's kind of half of it. But as you said, this is the kind of event where players get in there. You know, even Graham McDowell. I mean, he saved his card. Saved his status, you know, getting in there and being a winner. But, you know, this could be another good week for even some of the Canadians. Mackenzie Hughes is listed as kind of one of the feature players.
Yeah, that's great.
You know, so that's good for him and provides a little bit of profile for him. You know, maybe we'll be introduced to another superstar. Maybe it's Tom Dietry. Is that his first
name?
That's your guy.
That's your guy, Tom Dietry.
I'm going to have to be following Tom Dietry all week.
Well, we do have a lot of Korn Ferry Tour players in the field, and we actually have a Korn Ferry Tour player on this podcast this week. This guy has won on the Korn Ferry Tour, was on the PGA Tour just a few years ago, but you know, unfortunately, he's been grinding it out to keep his card on the PGA Tour. Didn't make it, but he's grinding it out on the Korn Ferry Tour. I want to get his take on the U.S. Open last week, his take on how he competes in this kind of atmosphere of what golf is. He's not a young buck anymore. And we have Conrad Schindler on this podcast. So we're looking forward to catching up with Conrad. I've only heard great things about this guy. This guy loves hockey, big Dallas Stars fan. And as you all know, they're in the Stanley Cup Finals. So we'll be talking a little bit of puck with Conrad as well. So without further ado, Conrad Schindler. All right, folks, I'd like to welcome to the podcast, playing on the Korn Ferry Tour, Conrad Schindler. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing well. How are you guys?
We're doing good. How are you feeling right now? We're going to talk a lot of golf, but huge Dallas Stars fan. Currently, as we're recording this podcast, it's 1-1 in the series. How are you able to focus on golf lately with your team in the finals?
You know, it's been nice because it keeps giving me something to be occupied with at night. I'm not the biggest basketball guy, so the NBA isn't super appealing to me. And to have my team, and you know, whoever it was, I'd still be watching the games. But you know, once it's your team, it's nice to really have that vested interest. And you know, I haven't been in this position as a Stars fan since I was 12. You know, I remember where I was in Game 6 when Jason Arnott scored. I was in my grandma's house in Lubbock watching it on TV, and Jason Arnott scored, and I was just devastated. So, you know, 20 years later, here we are. I'll probably be devastated if we don't win. So, you know, the emotions don't change.
When did hockey get on the radar for you? I mean, you mentioned obviously 20 years ago, but how did it become an interest? Did someone else expose you to the game, or is it just something you watched and got an interest in?
You know, that's a good question. And my dad, we lived in Houston before Dallas when I was young, and we moved to Dallas the same year the Stars moved from Minnesota. And so my dad's company would get season tickets, and everyone's like, hockey Texas, like, meh, you know, it just didn't really take off in Texas. And so he's like, well, you know, I got a family of four and it's free entertainment to take them. And it just kind of took off. I mean, I can't even make it around a rink very well on skates. So, I don't even play the game. I played roller hockey. Actually, growing up, one of our neighbors, Doug Jarvis, who won with the Canadians, I believe, he was the Stars assistant coach. And Bob Gainey lived down the street in our neighborhood. So, you know, it kind of had a big influence when they first got there, trying to bring, you know, also junior, not the junior level, but, you know, kids, you know, playing hockey. And so we played in the street with Doug Jarvis's son and my good neighbors growing up. They played growing up and we had a blast doing it.
You know what? I just was doing some research. I'm starting to wonder. I'm thinking the love of hockey, you might have a little secret Canadian into you. Your best finish, I don't know if you're aware, your best finish on the PGA Tour was the RBC Canadian Open, a T15 in 2018. Did you know that? Like, did you ever connect the two together?
Well, it was actually the Barbasol, which might have been the week after the Canadian Open, or the week before the Canadian Open. But, you know, I played the Canadian Tour.
Oh, never mind. You're right. I was so wrong. I didn't read that right. I got too excited, man. I apologize.
I should have just gone with it. Hey, but I had a second place finish on the Canadian Tour in Calgary.
Okay.
So, you know, we can kind of
– There you go.
You know, my best finish on the Canadian Tour was in Canada. You know,
well,
so
that makes
a little,
I mean, this is the type of stats that you're going to get on this podcast. Very inaccurate type of stuff. And maybe we'll just make up some stories from here on out to keep going. But you are playing on the Korn Ferry Tour right now. And we kind of want to get your take on the U.S. Open while we're fresh off the U.S. Open week. You know, it's safe to say you're not a young lad anymore out on the Korn Ferry Tour at 32, unfortunately. How is it watching the golf that's happening right now, this bombers golf, and wondering, you know, am I still able to compete at that level?
I mean, I would be lying if it said it doesn't really make your own wheels spin and trying to figure out, man, is this something that I need to address? Do I need to gain more distance? Do I need to be longer? And you know, everyone was kind of like, there's no way Bryson's going to be relevant at Wingfoot. You can't navigate that place and you can't bomb and gouge there. And sure enough, he did. You know, he only hit 41% of his fairways, but ironically against the field, that stacked up his 26th ranking. So that's, you know, against the field, that's a good ranking. But it's definitely transitioned that way. And you know, playing for position really isn't a big thing anymore, unless there's a definitive, you know, water hazard or tree or something that can totally screw your next shot. You know, for the most part, it's people, we're just going to get it down there as far as we can and go from there. So the game's been redefined in that sense, but also, you know, redefined in the way of people conducting themselves as athletes and just hitting it as far as they can. When I was in college, I would hit it 285, 290, and I was one of the longer hitters in college. And now, you know, I probably still hit it the same, but I would say I'm just at average now.
And how do you feel about that? And the fact of this idea of
it,
like,
sucks.
Yeah, it sucks. But like, do you
honest?
Are you on the side of people where it's like, let's actually find ways to, you know, whether it's roll the golf ball back or whatever it is to make it so you have to do more shot shaping, or like, how would you change the game, or would you?
So I what I don't want to do is I don't want to roll back the equipment. Okay, so there's two takes we can do, and I'm fine with either. If we roll back the equipment, you got to roll back the golf course. So the golf courses are getting longer and longer and longer. And it's not like Titleist is going to come out with a ball next year where it's going to be like, holy crap, Conrad picked up 10 yards. You know, he's now able to play the 7,700-yard courses better. So if we roll back the golf ball, you know, all we're doing is taking our sample size, and I wish it was visual, but I'm going to show you guys at least on our farm. You know, we're not going like this and taking the field and moving it like this. We're just going from here, and we're keeping the same distance and everything, and we're just shifting the sample size. It is not decreasing. It's not bringing the field tighter together, if that makes sense.
Like Bryson's still bombing at 330 into the rough, and Zach Johnson's still hitting at 250 into the fairway.
Right. Yeah. So, if we do that, then we need to scale back the golf courses. I'm a traditionalist, and look, I'm not gonna say what Bryson did was lucky or whatever. The guy's great. I'm gonna give him all credit where credit is due. Do I think that will work week in and week out? No. I'm not even gonna say he had a lucky week. He played great golf, period, bar none. But I don't think he's gonna win every U.S. Open moving forward. Now it's gonna be interesting. What's really gonna be interesting to see, him transition this game towards Augusta. And I know we've got kind of a weirder Masters being in the fall this year, in November. Who knows what could happen weather-wise. But, once we get back into our traditional way of having the Masters in April and everything, it'll be interesting to see him try to navigate that golf course. And I'm not saying he can't do well there. What it is doing is I'm starting to believe that he's going to somehow kind of revolutionize this game, maybe in a little bit, where guys are just going to be like, people starting to play golf are going to say, okay, maybe we're going to go single length irons, same deal. We're just going to try to beat the crap out of it. And, if I'm teaching a kid now to play golf, the first thing I would say to a 9 or 10 year old is, we need to hit it as far as we can. We can get you better to hit it straighter. But I can't all of a sudden say, hey, bud, by doing this, you're going to just hit another 20 yards further. So, that's kind of how I think the game is just moving. Just guys are just hitting it further and further at a younger and younger age. I kind of still grew up in the era of, fairways and greens. And, yeah, that mantra is good and all, and it helps statistics. But it's like, you watch some of these tour events when the rough isn't terrible and the guy hit, 29% of his fairways and he shot 18 under. So, it's shifted.
Yeah. So obviously the lowest score wins, and, you've got to have a plan of how you're going to go about doing that. And Bryson's obviously made a path that he's going to follow. What does it change for you though? Do you reevaluate every year and kind of decide, I've got to change and do something different? Or is Conrad Schindler's game the same game it was when you turned pro almost 10 years ago now?
It's relatively the same, but I'm getting older and I'm trying to become wiser. That's still hard to do, but I'm kind of at the stage where I'm looking at it and look, I'm still young and I still have the ability to get stronger, faster, right, fitter. And so I'm kind of looking at this off season is approaching it to, I do need to do that. And again, I'm not trying to pick up anything crazy like 20 yards, but if I can get my ball speed, average ball speed for me is high 160s, 169 ish. Maybe, but if I could clip it just a little bit over 170, low 170, 72, 73, to me, that's something that's very attainable. But I don't, again, I'm not looking for something crazy, but that can definitely be enough to say, okay, we're getting it out there just a little bit further. This hole that we've typically had a little bit of trouble with not getting around the corner, now we're there, I think it could just make it a little bit easier in that sense. So, my stature just doesn't, I'm 5'9". Maybe 5'9". I'm not going to get any taller. So, it is what it is. Would it be nice to be 6'4" and have some long arms? Absolutely. But it's not there. And so, you have to come to terms with that. And so you say, okay, well, where can I also always improve and become better? Hey, maybe inside 60 yards, short game putting, everything, if we tighten that up even better, we're going to save some shots. But it's not like by me picking up 10 yards, if I was able to this offseason, all of a sudden I'm going to be shooting way lower scores. Sure. Still got to get the job done once we get inside, 60 yards.
And I think, you're talking about that extra couple miles per hour ball speed. It sounds crazy. That could be the difference of being back on the PGA Tour, right? Like it's not small. Like you could be saving a stroke or two around maybe just by doing that. And that's huge for that difference. And I think what you talk about the short game side of things too is, you know, everyone's freaking out. If Patrick Reed would have somehow pulled it off after the first 2 days, those guys play way different golf games. He's not a long guy, but what he does is he chips and putts with the best of them, right? Like, there are other ways to get it done. Is that kind of where your focus? You're obviously trying to get a little bit more distance, but you are trying to work on that short game to, you know, get all those different shots around the greens, because, you know, once we get out on the PGA Tour, the golf courses do become a little bit harder, especially around the greens.
Your short game, bar none, can never be too good. So you can never be at the point where you're comfortable with everything. You know, you're always trying to be a little bit better, chip it a little bit closer, you know, definitely putt it better always. You know, I've made a big emphasis here in the last year and a half of trying to become a better putter from 10 feet and in, and I have. But I'm still not, you know, I still think there's definitely room for improvement outside of 10 feet. You know, when we have these 15 to 20 foot chances, even though technically they're low percentage chances, you still feel you should make a fair bit of them being a professional, and, you know, still struggling to match speed and line with some of those. And that's a big factor for those putts. And, you know, if we can improve our chipping, as always, you know, you can take pressure off the putter. If we're hitting a lot of good chip shots in there inside a 3 foot circle, then they're kicking pars. You're not having to stress. You're not having to grind. And, you know, sometimes we go play these rounds of golf where we'll shoot, you know, 64 and we don't stress or grind over anything, never having to clean up a putt. Obviously we played really well, but then there's days we'll also go shoot 69 and you may have only hit like 7 greens and you're fried after the end of the day because you chipped everything to 4.5 feet. And you had to just grind over putt after putt, and you had a couple lag putts that got to 5 feet, and you had to clean those up. So, you know, it's amazing how if you can just tidy that up, what it does in the mental capacity of not having to really even grind over some of these extra shots.
So, you know, with that all said, do you think then, you know, you've got a little extra leeway this year because you've got a rollover season? You know, you haven't obviously had the greatest start early on in the year, but you've got a little bit more time now to, you know, sort of get towards the end of next year when you can actually get a card and get further up in the rung on the PGA Tour circuit. Do you look at it that way, and the fact that there is that little bit of an extension this year?
Yeah, you know, it'll be nice to have an off season, and you don't have to really worry about, you know, job security or whatever it is moving into the next year. And definitely a lot of time to reevaluate and figure out, okay, what's the game plan moving forward? What do we need to improve on? What are we going to continue to work well on? So, you know, you got to take everything in stride this year because it's so new to all of us, and there's nothing's normal. And so, you know, normal now is not normal. So if we can accept that and say, okay, it is what it is, I don't have a choice. You know, we can sit there and bicker and complain, or we can just take it in stride and say, we know what the past was. This is what we can do right now. And we know what the future entails. We've got more tournaments. So, you know, you just kind of got to work in the moment and stay in the moment and, you know, one small step at a time of trying to improve everything.
So, you know, you touched on this isn't a normal year. It wasn't a normal year, and it's not going to continue to be one. Let's just go back to when everything happened. Like, what happened for you? What did you do to spend that time? Were you kind of playing mini tours, or were you trying to do other things to make ends meet during that time off?
So I did some online swing videos where literally I had people, they would send me just a couple swings via email. They would Venmo me like $20. And then I would turn around like a 4 or 5 minute kind of lesson in my driveway. I got a net and a mat from PGA Tour Superstore and got right there into it. And I mean, I had literally a giant dry erase board with post-it notes of every person that I was giving a lesson for. And at one point I had them, you know, Golf Week picked it up and then another publication picked it up. And they just started flooding in. I mean, one day I was given lessons from like 8 a.m. until literally it was like an 8-to-5 job. And I had to stop every like 15 minutes and like chug a gallon of water because my voice was going so hoarse from talking the whole time. You know, and I remember at one point I was sitting there and I had like 87 lessons I had to give. And I was just like, I'm never going to get through this. And, you know, the golf courses were kind of closed and, you know, so, just kind of knocked it out and then you know, that was kind of a way we killed time and tried to make the best of it.
Is that a passion of yours? Do you see that potentially being a future when playing golf's all done, is at least staying in the game and doing teaching going forward?
I have about zero desire to teach.
I just needed $20, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody had to cover my pizza.
Yeah.
Like I enjoy, you know, I enjoy going to the club and helping a buddy that needs help or whatever. I don't think it's in my DNA to be a teacher, and I want to be in this game forever. I want to play forever. I want to somehow be associated. I love the media aspect of it. I could definitely eventually see moving into some kind of commentary role, which I would love to do. But teaching is just not in my DNA. I'm a smart golfer, but I'm not like crazy smart. I can't. And it's hard. What was hard about some of these lessons is I'd get a video from a guy and he's like, "Hey, I won the club championship. I'm like a plus one," but he's like, "I fight a hard draw some days." And like, I look at his swing and I'm like, I mean, if they were like, "This guy plays in the PGA Tour," I'd be like, I'm not surprised. Like, his swing just aesthetically looked good. And I'm just like, I can't pick up on these little nuances. Like, you know, he's got his face shut just here and there. I'm not that good.
And that's actually what Scott does. He's a PGA professional. And it's
so I'm loving this.
Yeah, he's loving knowing that, you know, there is a difference. And I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Right? Sure, it's a gift, without doubt.
And I'm sure you did give great advice to some people just knowing, you know, your golf swing. But the amount of times where people have come out of trying to play, say it's like on the McKenzie Tour or on mini tours, and they think they can walk right in and know that and give it advice, and then they get out there and I think they all realize it's much harder. And you kind of picked up on that real quick, how much harder it is.
Yeah, it's not easy. And, you know, I have kudos to anyone that taught me or that still teaches and they have a passion in teaching. Because, I mean, at some point I just sit there and say, what do you not get? Like, quit doing that. You know, and I can tell you, like, 85% of my lessons, I can knock them out right here in 10 seconds. Quit ripping the club inside, quit picking it straight up, and quit coming right over the top. It's like inside, up, boom. I'm like, let's just do the reverse. Club in front, turn, and then go.
There you go.
It's not hard, guys. Let's go.
Damn. See, now he solved your entire profession too, Scott.
Yeah.
So all good.
That's tough. You didn't talk about the media side, though, and that being a potential interest for you. What are your thoughts on miking up players during the rounds?
I think miking up players brings great attention to the game, and it's a lot of fun for those people in the audience to kind of hear what's going on. It's tough because, man, I'm not someone that should be mic'd up because I mutter some.
You got a hockey mouth.
That's good, though. That makes like, it interesting.
I'd be great on the ice. You know, I could chirp with the best of them, but, you know, chirp with myself, and it's not very good. So I have no problem with it. I think what would be great to see in the future is maybe mic up the caddies. And if, you know, you could somehow put it on a delay and have control of that mic. So if, you know, a caddy's in a situation and he drops the F-bomb or whatever, they could, and the guy still, it's a great shot, they could just cut the mic out on that shot and say, hey, here's, you know, whoever hitting his pitching wedge on the 15th hole, you know. So I would like to see it maybe transition there. But, you know, every now and then they get those mics in there and you get some really good commentary and, you know, the fans really get to hear what's really neat. You know, okay, yeah, we got 118 front, 124 pin, but we need to fly at 120. You know, that's just stuff that people don't get to experience. So I like the idea of it, but there's still some tweaking for it.
So is there a particular player that you would love to hear more from if they were out there? It doesn't matter what level they're on, just somebody maybe you're familiar with or somebody you, you know, maybe I won't say idolize, but you're interested in how they think and what goes on in their head. Who would that be?
I mean, I think it would be really neat to just get to hear, you know, dialogue from Tiger as he processes things with, and, you know, I wouldn't say he's very vocal with the way he processes things. He's very internal and you can kind of see his wheels turning, but you know, every now and then he gets those dialogues going with Joey. And to me, that's stuff that would just be really neat to get to hear, or even if you could somehow get his interior dialogue of how he wants to process the shot. You know, we've heard a bunch from Phil and Phil's extremely colorful and all that, but who wouldn't want to hear from Tiger and how he thinks about it.
So what's your process like with your caddy? What are the type of stuff that you're talking about pre-shot that, Or, like, what do you want to know? Because some guys are different, right? Like, you know, I've caddied for guys that they want to do all their own yardages, like, right to the end. And you're basically just there to chat with them in between shots. And then there's other guys where they want every little thing out there. So from your perspective, you know, what do you want to know? What kind of conversations are you having around the process of hitting a shot?
So I'm pretty independent. I'm pretty simple. I need, you know, I want the caddy to get the number, but I'm going to get the number as well. And that's just a double check. Because, look, man, I think way too fast. I'm too ADD. And, like, I'm going to get four numbers wrong a week. It's a given. So, like, I mean, I've been so far off before. I've been, like, I got, like, 121 front, like, 145 hole. And the guy's, like, or 170, 183. You may be on the fourth hole in your book, and we're on the fifth hole here. You know, so stuff like that. But for the most part, I'm pretty independent. You know, I got to this level by myself for the most part. I didn't have a caddy hold my hand through it. And I'm not downplaying caddies, because caddies can be great, but caddies can also hurt you. And I've seen some guys that get out here and they're too analytical with their caddy, and every shot, like, it's like they're seeking their caddy's approval. I'm like, dude, you've hit the 7-iron from 180 yards 5 million times. It's the same freaking one. Like, the pin's 3 off the right. Don't hit it right of the pin. It's not that complicated, you know? So if I ever have to break down something with my caddy, it's because I'm actually truly really stuck in the situation, in between clubs, can't read the wind. So it takes a lot for me to actually want to pull that information. So, you know, I'm not a very caddy driven person. I don't really need them to give me a whole lot of information. So,
do you have somebody that works with you full time, or do you, you know, it's not unusual for guys on the Korn Ferry Tour that are week to week.
No, I'm kind of a week to week guy right now. And, you know, it really doesn't bother me all that much. And, you know, I've got my dad caddying for me this week, and he hadn't done it in a while. So, you know, looking to just go out there and have a nice walk. So it should be some fun.
So will he be pacing off the yardages this week, or is he purely a bag carrier?
He's a bag carrier, yeah. Bag carrier and personal chatting connoisseur. So, you know, we'll just have some good talks and just try to enjoy it just like it's another day at the course.
All right. Well, I'd be remiss. We are a Canadian-based podcast, and I know you did spend some time up here playing the Mackenzie Tour.
The whole Canadian national anthem, by the way.
That's good. You might be the only one.
I think it's because of all the hockey games I've been to and seen the Canadian team.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah. So what was your experience like up here? I mean, what were your takeaways from spending some time in Canada and playing up here professionally?
Well, if you guys want to know what's actually going on right now, I'm rooming with Dan McCarthy.
Oh, jeez.
Dan, how many wins did you have in a year? Four?
He owned it.
Four.
Beautiful.
So yeah, he, you know, trying to compete against him, it was pretty tough, but you know, we had, you know, it was a great time, and every tournament was so embraced by the community. You know, you'd stay in these billets and people loved having you, and the clubs were very passionate about having it. And it was actually received really well across the country, I thought, because you only get golf for what, 5 months, you know, excluding maybe like BC or something. You know, you don't get it very long, but man, when it's golf season, it comes fast and furious up there, and it is loved by all. It's like there's in the sporting world, it's like there's two things. It's like hockey, and then once it's done, it's like, let's get on the golf. And when it kind of winds down, it's right back into October, and it's time to get back on the ice. But I loved it. I loved going across the country. You know, you go to BC and over there in Victoria, and it's incredible how beautiful it is, and you make it through the plains all the way over to Nova Scotia, and more beauty over there. And I mean, it was such a fun experience, and I loved it because everyone's just so nice. And, you know, anyone would do anything to help anybody up there. And you know, I played up there 2 years, not back to back, but two different years. And you know, every time it was just such a fun time to go to. My only complaint was like playing in Calgary or Fort McMurray and watching the pterodactyl-sized mosquitoes try to come get you.
That's something you're not getting out in the South, that's for sure. Well, Connor, we really appreciate it. Hopefully you and your dad have some positive conversations about the Dallas Stars this week. We are obviously rooting for them, as you know, we got close ties with yourself being a huge fan and one of our favorites, and Ryan DeVoe being a huge fan. So good luck the rest of the season. We'll be rooting for you up here, and hopefully we can see you up at the Canadian Open having your best finish next time on the PGA Tour when you're there.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Thank you, Conrad, for joining us on the Tee Talk podcast. Great guy, you know, loves his hockey. We probably should have made him sing the Canadian national anthem from start to finish, but you know, not this time. Next time we get him on, we'll hold him to that. But, you know, we're looking forward to watching him out on the Corn Ferry Tour this week.
Definitely. I mean, the longer we keep him out there, the longer we keep our jobs in the media, apparently, because he's ready to take him.
Oh, he's going to be... He reminded me of, like, Rich Beem a little bit in that way. Just a great talker, knows his stuff, too, and that's the thing. There's a lot of guys that out there on all the tours that... Though they think the game as simple as possible, and that's kind of what he talked about a little bit, he just wants kind of the simple stuff, they can get complex, and he knows that right down to, you know, he probably, if I asked him, if what does 1 mile per hour extra ball speed get you distance-wise, with his swing, he'd probably be able to tell you.
Yeah, clearly he's a well-informed guy, and you know, what's cool is the fact that we talked about, you know, he's got this rollover season to deal with, and obviously he's a talented player. He's won out there on the tour, so now he's another guy we can follow into next year and see how he makes out.
Absolutely. Well, we haven't played this game in a while, Scotty. We usually used to play this every episode, little birdie or bogey. Are you ready to play again?
I am. I'm quite excited. Yeah, you're right. It's been a while. We eliminated it just with, you try not to have too many negative things all the time. But
birdie or bogey caught a little COVID, and it took a while to recover. So it's back. It's feeling good. It took its 3 month quarantine, though. It was struggling for a while, but it's back. So we're ready to bring it back. And my understanding is we're going with a U.S. Open edition this week. So are you ready for birdie or bogey, Scotty?
Let's do it.
All right. So the first one, we kind of talked about it off the top, but number one, birdie or bogey, players just trying to hit it as far as possible and just not really caring where it goes.
Birdie for me. I mean, you know, if we look at it and we analyze the game, we talk about strokes gained and gaining on other players in the field. Hitting it long is a skill. You know, it doesn't happen just by accident. It doesn't happen naturally. Some people may do other things that are outside of golf that help them to hit it further, but it's a skill. And you want to work with it as a coach. I want to work with it with my players to hit it further and hit it further and hit it further, because they can gain strokes on the field. And that's what it really comes down to. So I'm all for it. Obviously, you have to temper that into where you're hitting it. You have to still try to somewhere, you know, keep it on the planet, not incur penalty strokes or put yourself in a position that you can't play. But in general senses, you know, hit it as far as you can.
Yeah, I agree. It is a birdie. And I think the thing people say, you know, is like, oh, it's bombing. It takes skill to do that. If I could hit it further, I would. I don't know how to hit the ball that much harder than I do. I usually probably do swing around 80% always, especially like with my irons and stuff. Like, I just don't know how to do it. And it's clear a skill. It takes a lot of work to do it. Maybe I do need to get in the gym. I clearly don't have Bryson's body. I probably have closer to Phil's older body, not the way he has now. So I agree 100%. It's a birdie for me.
Yeah, there's a lot of elements to it. There's a lot of training that has to go into it. I mean, really hard work. And I mean, on the other side of it, it's figuring out a lot of things as far as optimization with your equipment and your swing. So yeah, it takes work. It just doesn't come easy by getting up there and trying to swing harder for a few days and magically you've gained, you know, 20 yards. It takes work and it takes time to develop that skill. So certainly we can't take it away from the players.
All right, next birdie versus bogey. Arm lock putting. You can see guys like Matt Kuchar, Bryson doing it. You put the putter right against your arm. Is this a birdie or bogey for you?
Bogey for me, it's within the rules, so I get that, so you can't fault them for that. Whether it should have been taken care of when they started talking about anchoring and been a part of that. Anchoring obviously is more of, you know, taking the butt end of the putter and putting it into you and using a single point and working the club around that. Whereas this is a case of it's resting against your arm. I think there is definitely an assistance there with using that as a lever. So as a result of it, I think it sort of starts to take the skill out of it. It's a case of, oh, hey, we've got something here that maybe is better, although not everybody's going to do it. They're all welcome to try it if they want. But for me, I think it's a bogey, and I think it's something that at some point the rules of golf will address.
Here's why I'm going to give it a birdie, because I'm giving it a birdie for the people that use it because it should be illegal. So I'm basically making your argument, but for the fact that like it seems so obvious, like it doesn't work for everyone. I've tried it. I'm sure if I practiced it enough, it would probably prevent like shorter, yippier putts or downhills because you've got something to rest it on. But you know, when you're trying a putter like that, it's usually on a flat surface in a golf shop somewhere. But that's like 100%. If I have a couple, I have a buddy that's probably going to be listening to this. That's, he gets really yippy on short putts, and he actually, what he does, because his putter's moving all sorts of places, he just brings the putter behind, stops it, and he thinks he calculates how far it should go behind, puts it on the ground, and then lifts it up and starts his through stroke. I think it's something like, and it works. It's crazy. But something like this, I think, would actually work for him, that it would take out the yippiness of the start of the putter. I agree with you on it. I wonder if we'll see it one day in like chipping. Like, what's the difference? If I can do that, why can't I do that in chipping? Well, maybe somebody will invent that. I mean, look at that. I just made an infomercial. But yeah, I'm calling it a birdie because I think it should be illegal. It will become illegal in the next couple of years. But it's not. So let's take advantage of it and let's win some US Opens while we're at it.
Yeah. The other side of it too is that, you know, we're talking about things relative to the rules of golf. And I think anything that keeps a player in the game on a casual sense, if they have to do that, I'm good with that. You know, I wouldn't care if a person goes out and, you know, was counting rounds and they weren't using it for their handicap, but they were just going out to play golf and they were using a long putter anchored. Help yourself. As long as you're not playing against me and we're playing for cash and we're supposed to be playing the same rules. But if it keeps them playing the game, then that's fine too. So it's a bogey for tour players. How's that? Or for handicap players, players that are keeping an actual handicap.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm all for people hurting themselves by keeping a lower handicap than they actually are. Sure. So if you want to get a belly putter and use it, I'm going to take it away from you when we're playing for money, though. So, all right, our next birdie or bogey is severe greens on a golf course. We're talking a lot of undulation, a lot of speed all at the same time. Is this a birdie or bogey for you?
I think it's a birdie for me. I think it adds part of the element of strategy. And strategy, for a lot of people think about, you know, hitting tee shots and working their way around bunkers and things. But as I mentioned, you know, playing golf course yesterday where looking at the severity of the greens and knowing where the slopes were. And I was playing with a guy who was Dan Keogh, who was the first caddy for Mike Weir and also played on the Canadian Tour. And, you know, right from the very first hole, we were talking about it and going, man, we've got greens that are so firm here today. You know, I'm playing for the front edge in most cases because the ball is just going to hit that front edge and work its way up, probably stay short of the hole unless we get a really, you know, front pin. I think severe greens are a great element to add to a design, and they can add a lot to a short design. So we've talked a lot on this podcast about Winter Park. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a short golf course previous to the current design by Keith Reb and Riley Johns down there. They had these flat little boring greens. Well, now, you know, they have very severe greens. Now, they're not super, super fast, but they are, have some severity to them. Not to the point where you look at it and say, hey, this is, you know, it's like I'm playing mini putt. But I tell you what, it brings a lot more strategy in as far as hitting all your other shots. And you can't just get away with just throwing a ball up and just land in the center of the green because you are not guaranteed, you know, a two putt automatically. So always a birdie for me.
I agree. I'm actually going to give it both scores in a way, but mostly if you're just saying this is the layout of it, this is what they look like, I'm giving it a birdie. I think I love the idea of approach shots where you're mm-hmm. like, I actually can't even think about aiming at the flag because it's going to filter all the way down to the left. And then because of that, now I'm off the green almost, right?
On that note, did you see the hole obviously at Wingfoot where the, I think it was day two, the pin was below the canopy or behind the canopy of the tree. And it was in the back left. And then people were all of a sudden crying about, oh, they should cut down that tree. For me, I thought, well, that's part of the strategy of the game. You either got to hit a low shot that runs in and runs up there, or you play around it and you putt from there. Nobody should be guaranteed, free access. Yeah, free access to the pin by going directly at it. Nobody says that's the way the game is supposed to be played.
It's dumb. It goes against the other stuff. You're talking about doing it, making a shot shape.
Right.
So
exactly.
Why are we cutting down the tree? Yes, I agree with you. Well, yeah. So I just like the idea of having to think a little bit more on there. I find them more fun to putt on. If I have to make this big windy putt, like I don't care if I three putt those, and it's fun. It's different. Not every course has it. You know, Augusta's like that. Like they're all over the place, and you got to aim in the right spot, or else you know. And people get to know golf courses that way, right? Mm-hmm. And like there's sometimes you go out and play one with a lot of undulations, you'll hit there like, oh, you are screwed. Like, it's, what do you mean? It's right side of the pin. It's pin on. Nope, hits the green and now it's off of it because it's a false front, things like that. I like that. I think they're awesome.
Yeah.
I
was just going to say, one of my last comments I had on that was, and again, yesterday, back to the game, I was leaving the Cherry Hill Club and I was talking to a guy who's a videographer. And I said, you know, playing this golf course, what do you think of the greens? And he said, it really engaged me because it engaged my artistic side. I looked at the greens and I could see where I'd have to play certain mm-hmm. shapes and certain shots. And he had lots of options. It wasn't just one way to get to the hole, but he had to sort of figure that out. He couldn't just, you know, he couldn't just grab a 60 and flop it up there. He had to figure out the ways to, you know, the ball was going to land, roll, how much spin that you have to have, how much control, the trajectory. And having it engage or having him engage that way, he just said that was just more fun. It was more like a puzzle every time he had to hit a shot into a green.
I agree 100%. It's awesome. Where I was going to say the bogey, though, and we've all played the golf course where there's a lot of undulations, but then they have a superintendent that doesn't play golf, and they put it on a spot where, like, you can't play that. Like, it's just, it's no matter what. Yeah, it's a two-putt. Or, like, you're not, like, the chances of making it, you basically have to, you're trying to leg it in a place where it's not a dumb second putt more than leg it into the right spot. Like, and it's not even the right spot. It's just like that stuff. I hate that. And it's like, if I miss the green, it's an automatic bogey because the chance of me ever one putting this is impossible. Yeah. So those are the things.
I see where you're at on that. But I mean, I even had a shot yesterday and I had a discussion afterwards. It was on a par three. And it happened to be one in the 1972 Canadian Open where Lee Trevino would lay up on this par three, sort of like Billy Casper did at Wingfoot. And they alluded to that many times in the broadcast. And this par three, I didn't want to get to the left side of it because it would be in the high side of the hole and there would be no way to make a three. So it was easier to go to the right of it. And even if I missed the green, to have a pitch up and then try to make that for my three, that was an easier way than hitting it on the green. Again, you're not guaranteed a regulation of, oh, you know, hit one onto the green and then two putt. Sometimes that's not the way that you have to play it. So if a golf course forces your imagination because the architect made a design that way, I think that's brilliant. And it's up to you as a player to figure out the easiest way to play the hole.
I agree. We have two more for birdie or bogey. The next one, players thanking a list of sponsors at a trophy ceremony. We don't need to go far. I think we both know the answer. Yeah. It's a bogey for me. I get why they do it. I'm going to give Bryson credit. The guy kills it. Here's the question we should be asking. Have you ever went out and bought a product because of somebody listing it in their trophy presentation?
No, and you're right. Bogey for me as well. I think there's a time and a place to give thanks to your sponsors and their support. And, you know, you can do that personally. They're obviously getting a lot of credit as it is. Usually you can see the athlete playing well. They're getting more TV time. Generally, their logos are on their body in some way or their equipment or whatever the case. They're getting what they're getting out of that. If he wants to send them a thank you letter later on, have at it, but I don't think you need to go full NASCAR. I think you can take care of the things that are happening just then during that week, you know,
or
the tournament organizers, the superintendent, all that sorts of things, you know, thank them, take that time to do that.
Or do this instead of saying like, thanks, NetJets, who if I don't know how many people are watching, say it was 2 million, 1.99 million. I don't even
can't
think that works.
It.
Can't afford NetJets anyway. Like if I'm doing that, be like, if I'm Bryson, you know, Cobra had my driver dialed in this week. We've been working on getting the spin and my new F9, like with this setting, blah, 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 blah. It just worked perfectly for maybe I'm listening then, or like, hey, this new Bridgestone ball, it's changed a little bit from the last year's one for me, and I think it's helping me do X or Y. I'm all for that. But when you're going through like, oh, thank you, SO gas station, for the gas in my Mercedes Benz or whatever. I think he drives a Bentley. But like things like that, it's like, come on, like no one's listening. If he kept it with golf, I'm all for it, but they don't. So bogeys all around.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, we got one more. This one is I'm conflicted on. I want you to go first. So okay. On the broadcast, they've been doing these playing through commercials where they got the golf in one corner, the commercials in the other corner. Before we get to that, I just want to note that I forget who had this broadcast last week. I believe it was NBC.
NBC, yeah.
They almost showed one less stroke per minute on Sunday than CBS did during the PGA Championship. It's bad coverage. It's awful coverage. I get it. When somebody's that far away, you're kind of going to stick with that narrative. But we're all there to watch golf. Let's watch some golf. I don't want to go too far into it. But what they do is these playing through commercials sometimes. So are they a birdie or bogey for you?
They're really a bogey for me, believe it or not. I thought I was going to like them. I thought it was going to be great. But even on a large screen TV, the image is so small. Like they don't generally split the screen perfectly. They, you know, it's have smaller windows and they have some other stuff running around it. You can't really see what's going on anyways. I'd rather, you know, second screen it, find out more on Twitter, look at it on, you know, maybe a golf TV or through the app, which I used a little bit this week, the US Open app, which was great. Had some feature groups and stuff there. I think it's a nice attempt. But not that great. I mean, I appreciated the fact that they did, commercial free stuff for just over an hour at the end, which was great. But you know what? Maybe just play the commercials a little shorter, get them done quickly and get back to the action where we see stuff going on, not necessarily for the commentating, believe me. But so we can have, large enough images and stuff that we can see and actually know what's going on. So bogey for me, I think.
Yeah, no, I'll give him credit. I'm going to give the idea of it a birdie. I think it's got room for improvement. I wonder if they're actually adding that as strokes they're showing per minute to the broadcast. Because
probably.
Yeah, that's like, because when I'm watching broadcast, I feel like I never see any strokes, any swings. It's just, I'm not getting into it. I did read a great article that the plan really is that you will be able to see every shot by every player at some point soon. And great article. It's on The Athletic if you can find it. Just basically the plans for the PGA Tour to own its broadcast in the future if you can find that. But I like the idea of it, the actual execution of it. I think you're right on the bogey side. So I'm going to take a par, and we don't usually allow those, but I'm doing
it. Wow.
I got one more for you. This just came as I have Golf Channel in the background right now, the Payne Stewart Cup. I don't even remember the name already. You already told me once, but that's what I'm going to call it. This unveiling of Tiger's golf course was started at 3 o'clock. It just wrapped up now, 10 to 8 o'clock.
Is that 9 holes?
No, that was 19 holes. They are now showing highlights of this exhibition event on Golf Channel. Is that awesome. A birdie or bogey for you?
Bogey for me. I'm not even gonna turn this on. There's just no way. I mean, you know, maybe if I was really bored, I would flip it on and have a watch. But this was not even on my list to see. I mean, that's great to see a Tiger designed golf course. Although you could probably count the hours that he was there, probably on one turn of the clock. Not that big of a deal. And I think, you know, that brings us to another point. We got 50 PGA Tour events on the schedule. how many exhibitions and boondoggles do we need?
That's fair. Well, I think, I mean, let's be honest, they're doing it because they lost the other ones. They're and Tiger's out there. They're trying to make some money back here.
True, fair enough.
But yeah, it's a double bogey for me. Why don't we grab a quick break, Scotty, and let's hit the mailbag. How does that sound?
Sounds good. All right, welcome back. It's the mailbag. We love to have your questions in here every week. We open up the mailbag every week so you can pass them on, and we're looking forward to answering five that you sent in this week. So let's get started here. Under any circumstance, would you consider putting two drivers in your golf bag?
No. Why? Why would you?
You of all people.
Yeah, I've had four drivers this year and will be getting fit for my fifth on Friday. So me of all people, I should, but no, it makes no sense. Like, what is it? Like, bring my long drive driver and then my regular? Like, if I have a driver that I'm going to hit on one hole, that's my long drive driver. Well, like, why don't I just practice with that and hit it on every hole? No, that's why would you do that? And why would you ask me that question?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in essence, my three wood's pretty strong as it is. I mean, it's 14 and a half. It's not super strong, but it goes a long way. So I feel like I have two drivers sort of in there anyway. So I never saw this as a great strategy. I mean, you know, unless you really got some golf courses that are going one way and the other. But even then, I mean,
yeah, like a super extra stiff shaft so you can like slice one, and then like a senior flex shaft so you can hook one.
See, the flex isn't even going to do that. You'd have to have change face angles. I mean, yeah. So you know what? It's ludicrous. So no, I would never consider putting two drivers in my bag. We'll just leave it at that.
All right.
Good. You good with that?
Yeah.
All right, on to the next one here. With COVID causing an increase in rounds played at golf courses this year, what impact do you think that will have in 2021 on green fee rates and membership rates?
That's a good question. I actually don't think it's as much of the play. I think the play is actually a good thing for a lot of more public courses in the sense of it's balancing out, and it's not going to perfectly balance it, but it balances out all the tournament losses and things like that. That's why I think if you're going to see things go up a little bit is because of that. They're going to go up every single year anyway, a little bit. I don't see it having too big of an impact though, personally, other than the fact that a lot of courses are probably losing a lot of money from those tournaments, weddings, things along those lines. That's probably where they might try to scale it back. But that being said, why they might just make weddings and tournaments cost more the next year, right? So who knows? They could do it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, for sure. I've talked to a few golf course owners, managers, pros about this, and certainly they're looking at the effect on their tee sheet as far as capacity and how much those tee sheets have been used up. So some, you know, when they're looking at it long term, and say that this might be their opportunity finally to maybe up their green fees a little bit if they haven't done that for a little while. There's other ones as well that are discussing starting to eliminate some of the third party stuff. For a lot of years, especially when the T-sheets weren't quite as full, a lot of golf courses would make use of a GolfNow or a third-party corporate group with a, you know, some sort of card that would provide access to a bunch of courses or something like that. A lot of the courses are talking about taking back their T-sheet and the fact that they don't want to give away all those spots, and they realize that they can sell those. So yeah, that's the one effect that I think we might see out of this.
Go out and there's other ways to do it where you can pay a fee to host, you know, use their hosting service or whatever versus, you know, somebody else like you, or like build your website, you know, go to a better website provider if that's the case.
Yeah.
Might know one if you're looking. I think you're 100% right there. If it goes up, it's not going to go up that much. What I hope stays the same, I think the biggest thing that I hope stays the same, and I know it's not going to happen, is I really hope courses don't go to anything lower than 10 minutes in between. I've found pace of play this year has just been amazing at 10 minutes. Some courses were doing 15. We played at Osprey Valley where they'll do a random break of 20 in between. And because of that, like, rounds are under 4 hours every single time, which I think in the end probably benefits you more than the opposite, where I think for a couple times people get the itch, but if you're out there on a Saturday and it's 5 hours, you might lose people the next Saturday, where if they're out there on Saturday, it's actually still 4 hours and 15 minutes. Well, you know, it might help. So that's my biggest hope, is that we don't go to anything lower than 10 minutes.
Yeah, I like that. I like that for sure. All right, number three here. I don't know if this one's a little cheeky or what, but I don't know. I guess they just want to hear from us. Water, sports drink, or beer at the turn?
It's a good question. what did I shoot on the front? No, to be honest with you, I don't really care. It depends, like, when I'm playing. I like a drink on the turn. I always have water. I'm not a sports drink guy ever. Like, you'll never see a Gatorade or anything like that in my hand. Free ads, I guess, this week. SO Gatorade.
Throw them out there.
Yeah, may as well just keep doubling down. Thanks to our sponsors. But you know, I like a drink at the turn. Maybe a beer, but I've been turning into like more of a vodka soda at the turn. It's a little lighter on. I feel like I'm a little lighter in the step. I don't know, beer.
You're playing golf in Vegas now or something?
Yeah, I get a little sluggish. Just a lot of ice. It's refreshing. Give me a vodka soda at the turn this year. It's been my go-to. I always got water anyway, so I'm not too worried about that.
I've always been just a water guy. I've filled a water bottle and fill it at sort of the turn. Sports drink, not so much. Beer, if I'm out with the boys on occasion, you know, I'll have
occasion,
one. But
he says.
On occasion, but it's...
You had one on the 5th and then the 9th and then the 12th the last time we walked the golf course, but who was counting?
It's not my priority on the golf course as far as the having a drink or two or whatever. But I'll say water is probably the most common of those three.
Yeah, for me, I'm with you. I might have one round a year where it's like a drinking round with my friends. I don't do well. Well, in it, and not the fact of that. It's just like at that point, I don't want to golf anymore.
Exactly.
Like I just want to be sitting. I don't want to be golfing. It's like, so why are we doing both? Like, I like both of these things, but I like them on their own. So I'm right with you on that.
All right, on to the next one here. You know, this is obviously a big discussion. I think we've had it sort of, but someone asks, will Bryson win one of the next two Masters? And obviously that's more relevant when we're talking about a Masters here coming up in November and then another one following in April. So two in a short period of time, will he win one of those?
Recency bias obviously is going to have you going towards it, but this guy turns the ball over when he hits it well. It's going right to left. That helps him basically on every single tee shot. That being said, DJ hits it just as long, as we've learned. Ooh. And DJ's on fire and has been more consistent. It's hard not to say I'm not going to say he will, but is he a favorite in the two? I guess I got to have to. I'm going to say he will. I think he probably gets the one of the two. The thing about the first Masters, though, is it's something we've never seen before, and that it's in November. This isn't the same golf course, though it is. I think it's going to surprise some people what we're getting out there. So I'm going to say if he wins one of the two, it's the one in April next year. But I think he's got to be up there as a favorite. I'm going two top tens guaranteed. There you go.
Well, that's not a win. you know what? I'm going to go with the odds, and the odds say no.
I guess it's Bryson versus the field for two events.
Yeah, it's exactly it. So I think while it's certainly easy to speculate that he has the ability, obviously, now to win a major championship, which he's done. Certainly the potential is more than there to make it happen. But if I have to go against Bryson versus the field, I'm going to take the field for two Masters. Maybe he wins the third one. Who knows? But we'll go with that for now. And I'll say no. I might have to eat that by April. Have to eat that by November. We'll see. But we'll get on the buffet with Bryson and see what we can eat. All right. Last one here. Do you think Matt Wolf will eventually win a major championship?
I mean, he's got the game. I don't see why not. I said before when they both came out, I got Morikawa before him. I'm going to stick with that. If every tournament going forward, I'm still picking Morikawa over him. But he's got the game. Sure. It's hard, though. Like, I think people, they see people at the end and they're like, will this person win? It's hard. Lee Westwood was in every major championship for 20 years. How old is he? 23 years. Like, he's still in there, and he's never picked up one. I'm drawing a blank on on a couple other guys there. Steve Stricker, same type of thing. There's a lot of guys that were around for a long time and in the mix and top tens. Ricky Fowler, right? Like, Ricky Fowler still never got there after a year where he finished second in every single one, basically. So it's hard. Do I think he will? Sure. But if you're going against the odds, most guys don't end up winning a major in their career. So I'm going with the Scotty method. I'm actually going to say no.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go opposite of that on this one, just because I think there's more opportunities there. Being 21 years old.
Well, 21, damn, I didn't realize. So I was like,
yeah, he's a young dude. So he's got a lot of majors ahead of him. I don't, you know, again, it's hard to sit there and predict that, you know, he could fall off the tour tomorrow. You just never know. But all signs are that, you know, he's going to be around for quite some time, which is going to give him a lot of opportunities. So I'm going to go, yeah, sure. Why not? He's going to win a major, but it might only be one, you know.
Let's also recognize that when Rory won four in that quick span, if you turned on the Golf Channel that year, he got his fourth. There was talks of will Rory pass Jack.
Yeah. Definitely.
So,
definitely.
Like, I think people get so quick, and it's sports, yeah. It's talk, it's content, yeah. Right? And we're all for content. We're in the content biz, right? I hope Rory wins the next four in a row, or Bryson. If Bryson won it, like, we're gonna be talking about it. Like, same with Brooks. Look at Brooks. Brooks won four, and he's been struggling kind of since. If Brooks never won again a major, would you be surprised? Like, no, you shouldn't be, because of that's golf, right? And it happens.
It's
so
hard.
It's really hard. So I have no idea. I'm going to take no just to make this interesting and eat crow when we see him win the Masters in November.
All right. Sounds great. Thanks, everyone, for the questions. Keep sending them in. We love to answer your questions in the mailbag. Catch us on social media on Twitter or Instagram at Flagstick or at Flagstick Golf, and we will answer your questions or try to answer them every show.
There was one more that came to me over the weekend. They wanted me to bring up the mailbag. It was, why do you hate white belts so much?
And that one's for you. That's your answer.
You look stupid wearing them. But that was it. The tip of the week, I have one. It's don't wear white belts. But Scott has one that will help your swing. Scotty, what's the tip of the week?
This week, the tip of the week is about making swing changes. I think a lot of people really don't understand what happens with a lesson in trying to make a swing change. A lot of people have the perception that they come for a lesson, you do a couple of things, they do a couple of swings, and bam, you know, their swing has changed. It doesn't work that easy. I mean, from a motor learning standpoint, we need a lot more reps than that to basically reprogram our brain. So one thing that I would say to people, if they're making changes in their full swing, is to really be deliberate about the process and really look at even making swings that are full swings, but are in really slow speed, to really get a feel of what's happening during the motion, the changes that are happening with what you're trying to do, what you're doing with your coach. And that is a lot better way to ingrain it into your brain. Usually what will happen is, if you go back to your full swing at full speed, automatically you'll go back to your tendencies. You won't have actually made the change. So you're going to have to work hard to do that. You need to be deliberate to get that feel imparted. And also at the same time, measure it when you can. I mean, measure it obviously by the results, but with a launch monitor by the ball flight. But, you know, work hard on that, be deliberate, knowing that these changes will take some time to work in there, and be patient.
I love it. Be patient. Keep working on it. That's a great tip. Well, that's it for this week, folks. We hope you enjoyed our thoughts on the U.S. Open. We hope you enjoyed the interview with Conrad. Great guy. We're looking forward to seeing him as he competes for the rest of the year on the Korn Ferry Tour. Well, we got a little bit of a break for majors this year. We got almost 2 months now. We're back in November in Augusta, and a bunch of just tournaments in the way. You know how they say, like, that guy's just like a guy out on the tour? We just got a bunch of guys version of tournaments, and this is the guy version of tournaments this week. Just a tournament, the Corrales Punta Cana Resort and Club Championship. it sounds like it's a club championship. It doesn't even sound, you know what I mean? Like, they should just call it the Corrales Club Championship, that they just let a bunch of pros in. But they should actually allow a couple of the winners of the club, like the winner of the club championship in the event. Maybe they probably do, because that's how they filled out the rest of the field, and that's why it's so low.
Just silly. get me to the women's PGA in a couple of weeks and maybe we'll talk about that. But yeah, as opposed to these events, and you know, no disrespect to Conrad and the boys, but they're going to be playing the Wichita Open this week. So, you know, we haven't got the most exciting week in golf, but you know, we'll get through it. Don't
worry. Well, Scott, if you want excitement, you can tune in to the Golf Channel right now. We have a panel of five golfers sitting down to talk about their round at this Payne Cup.
Payne's or whatever.
Payne's Valley Cup. Riveting stuff. I got to go. I got to go watch this because I need a good fall asleep. Someone to fall asleep to so I can get a good rest. So let's leave it at that. Thank you again. And we'll chat with you guys next week. Spot.